Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. Today is February 19, 2021. It's a very chilly 17 degrees this morning here in Nashville, with about 6 inches of snow accumulated over the last couple days. But the sun is shining today full and bright, and so we may have a little bit of a thaw. A couple of weeks ago, I noticed on the Tennessee State Parks Facebook feed a promotion for newly renovated cabins at Pickett State Park. This promotion included some beautiful pictures of these outstanding and historic cabins. This collection of buildings at Pickett State Park includes several cabins and the park headquarters, and they are on the National Register of Historic Places. They were built by the Civilian Conservation Corps in cooperation with the National Park Service back in the 1930s. They are truly one of the real treasures to be found in our Tennessee state parks. While the cabins have been renovated numerous times over the last 80 years, the most recent renovation perhaps is the most caretaking. And so I thought it would be interesting to share with my listeners a little more about the details of that special project. My guest today is Travis Stover, the park manager for Pickett State Park. Together we learn a little bit about Travis, as well as learning about these very special cabins and the painstaking and thoughtful process for their rehabilitation. Travis will be the first to tell you that he is not individually responsible for this effort, but I think you'll agree he is a terrific spokesman for the team of individuals who made this happen. And so I hope you'll enjoy this interview with Travis Stover of Tennessee State Parks. Travis Stover, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here today.
Well, fun. It's great to have a diversion, at least on this snowy day here in Nashville. You're in Pickett State Park, or you're in Overton County, Tennessee, I presume.
My home is in Overton County, right. But today, because the park is currently without power and telephones due to the snow and ice storm.
Well, tell us more. What kind of a snow event did you get up there?
It started with mainly just some kind of freezing rain and ice, and that's been the biggest impediment we had. And fortunately, we didn't sustain any structural damage yet that we know of. It's been mostly just down power lines and phone lines. And then last night it followed up with about an additional 4 inches of snow. So, So utility crews and rangers and park maintenance are there trying to get everything back online, but still just a little bit iffy at this point.
So Travis, the subject of today's discussion with you is the renovation of the historic cabins there at Pickett. But before we're going to talk about that in some detail, before we do, let's talk about you and your experience with the Tennessee State Parks. I read on your bio that you're actually a graduate of Tennessee Tech. Is that right?
That is correct.
Tell us about that. What made you choose to go into the conservation field as a high school senior and going into college?
Well, in high school, I went to Clark Range High School in the south end of Fentress County in Clark Range there, and was active in forestry conclaves and envirothon competitions. Always been interested in wildlife. As a kid, I thought I wanted to be a veterinarian, but as I got a little older, I decided that maybe that length of schooling may not be my forte. So.
Okay.
I was fortunate enough to actually earn a college scholarship offer to Tech and to Roan State Community College, and opted to go to Roan State because it gave me a few different options after I finished my associates, and ultimately opted to go to Tennessee Tech and major in wildlife and fishery science.
Super. And then how did you get into Tennessee State Parks? What was the avenue that you took it to get into Tennessee State Parks?
Well, it's kind of an interesting story. Well, at least I think it's an interesting story. I had completed my bachelor's degree and had everything set up to go on to graduate school, and was working at a bank at the time. And I knew that with the graduate school and the obligations that I would have, that keeping that job was going to be a little bit difficult. So I actually just put in for a position as a seasonal interpretive ranger with Tennessee State Parks, and one of the professors I had encouraged me to do so, and was fortunate enough to get a position at Edgar Evans State Park just outside of Cookeville, working for Carl Halfacre. Within about a week, the bug had bitten me, and I actually called up Tennessee Tech and said, hey, I don't think this graduate school thing is going to be for me. I'm pursuing this park ranger thing. And that was in 2003. And the rest, I guess, is a little bit of history.
Well, you know, for our listeners who may be interested in careers in conservation, that is the way people get into working in as rangers in state parks. That's over and over and over the story is people have a summertime experience working as a seasonal interpretive person, and then they follow that into a career.
Yes, absolutely. The seasonal interpretive ranger or seasonal interpretive recreator position is a great avenue for people to do that. For the general layperson, I typically just say it's kind of like an intern where you can kind of learn the ropes, but it's also a great opportunity for networking, to separate yourself maybe from a crop of people who are applying for a park ranger position that may not be known by folks doing the hiring. And that may be just that little bit of edge and the experience working in state parks and kind of having the insider knowledge, I think is a good thing if you can do it.
Well, people ask me all the time, how do you get a job in Tennessee State Parks? And I tell them, get on the register to be a seasonal, and that works both ways. It's helpful for the young person who is exploring career opportunities, but it's also very, very helpful for the state park management to actually get a chance to observe the talent that's out there and pick among them, get familiar with them before you actually make that pull the trigger on the big hire and send someone off to ranger school. So that's expensive.
Yeah, absolutely. And for those of that's maybe listening that may not be familiar with the process, I don't want people to think that there's not other avenues, because we've benefited from a tremendous number of people in state parks who didn't go the traditional route that have been amazing assets too. But that is a great avenue to get on board with NC State Parks. Right.
Now, when you came on board, where were you first assigned? You said you were a seasonal at Edgar Evans, which is a cool place. Where did you go for your first assignment on a full-time basis?
Well, the first assignment, I was sent to Nathan Bedford Forest in Benton County, in West Tennessee. I'd actually transitioned from Edgar Evans. I just only worked there a short period of time and transitioned to Fall Creek Falls.
Okay.
As a seasonal. And that's really where I spent most of my time as a seasonal and was kind of a good launching point. But I went to Nathan Bedford Forest in West Tennessee as the interpretive specialist there. And was there for 2 years before, moving to another state park closer to home.
So then you went from NB Forest to where?
I went to Standing Stone State Park.
Okay.
And was a ranger there for almost 7 years.
Okay. And then over to Pickett.
Well, actually took a detour and went to the Sergeant Alvin C. York State Historic Park.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, I was a ranger there working with Andy York, Sergeant York's son, for a period of time. And then that park eventually became its own standalone park. And I was promoted to the park manager there. And then just a little over coming up on 4 years at Pickett State Park as the park manager now.
The York home was a satellite park, I guess, of Standing Stone.
The York Park initially was a satellite park of Pickett.
Of Pickett.
I believe Cordell Hull was a satellite of Standing Stone.
That's right.
And then they merged and they put Cordell Hull and the York Park as kind of a unit together under one manager. And then eventually, as the York Park continued to grow and expand the offerings, they separated those two parks out. And they're both standalone parks now with their own park management.
So interesting that you would work at York. It was among the early parks that we brought into the system that were purely because of the cultural resource aspect, interpreting the life of one of Tennessee's great citizens and the way of life that existed back in those days and times.
Yeah, absolutely. And for years, if you visited the York Park, you had the opportunity to directly you know, interact with the York family.
Right.
You know, Alvin's son was a park ranger. His nephew was a maintenance worker there. His daughter-in-law greeted people at the grist mill. And then when they transitioned to the home place, you know, she was greeting people there. So I had the opportunity to you know, work with them and work with the family and really get a lot of insider information. And, you know, their primary focus during those times was, you know, what was life like with Daddy? And, you know, once, you know, those folks transitioned into retirement, we saw it as an opportunity, like, you know, I'm not cool and I'm not, you know, Andy, so I can't, you know, rely on those, you know, personal stories. So we expanded kind of some of the interpretive aspects with the help of, you know, the Parks Administration at the time. You know, we had a lot of help with that.
Well, that was how you first got on my radar, was the interpretive programs that you were doing there at the York home.
Yeah. And I wish I could take full credit for that, but okay. I would be in terrible shape if I did that. We had a lot of people, you know, Josh Wagner, who would go on to be the park manager, was, you know, integral into that part of the adding the interpretive aspects, and Hobart Akins, the, you know, folks that were heavily involved, and Jeff Wells, who was the director of the interpretive programs for state parks for a number of years before he retired. So I was fortunate enough to get to work alongside them, and they took me under their wing, and I think, you know, we did a pretty good job of moving that park in the right direction.
Well, these were programs that sort of focused on the life of the infantryman in World War I experience.
Yes, absolutely. And a lot of this was brought on because, you know, it was a part of the story that hadn't been focused on as much, but also with the, you know, the centennial that was coming up on us, you know, during that time frame, that, you know, we knew there was going to be a lot of focus. And the York site was already in the spotlight because of the national prominence of that. But we thought that, you know, we could add a little something extra to that.
Super. Well, if any of our listeners have an opportunity to travel around in these parks that we're speaking of, Standing Stone and Cordell Hull, Birthplace, Pickett, are all in the northeastern part of the central part of the state, I guess. Go to Crossville and Cookeville and go north. The Alvin York Birthplace is also there. And they make interesting places to visit if you just want to do a day trip. And the landscape up there is so beautiful. Tell our listeners exactly where Pickett is located, where you're located now.
Pickett State Park's located on State Route 154. We're technically located in Pickett County, Tennessee, but we're just outside of Jamestown, about 12 miles, just adjacent to the Big South Fork and just south of the Daniel Boone National Forest there. So we're kind of in a mecca of just wilderness and, you know, kind of the backwoods area. That's just a beautiful location with tremendous geologic features and, you know, biological diversity and stuff like that.
A Pickett as a state park is how many acres?
The park itself is just a little under 1,000 acres.
Okay.
It was initially developed as intended to be about a 2,000 acre park as a state forest park under the Division of Forestry when they were still under the same, management under the Department of Conservation many, many years ago. And then
Right. When
the park was officially transferred out, it was just about 1,000 acres.
But it's surrounded by a state forest now.
Yeah, the state forest is over 20,000 acres. So,
Right. You
know, we're surrounded by that, plus, you know, bordering the Big South Fork, which is over 100,000 acres.
So. Right. So it's wilderness. I mean, there's actually bears in those woods.
Yeah, I've seen more bears than I've seen deer, to be honest with you.
My goodness, that's something else. We want to talk about the historic cabins that are there at the park. And I know the park carries the name, the Civilian Conservation Corps Memorial Park. Tell us about that.
So, you know, we try to do our best to be a memorial to the Civilian Conservation Corps. And we're one of the few parks that's actually listed on the National Register of Historic Places because of the historic structures that are there. And, it's, you know, the five cabins that we're discussing today, the original park office, several restroom facilities, some of those still in operation, a recreation lodge, just all kinds of historic, you know, components to that park. And thought that I wasn't a part of that process when that decision was made, but I know that it was due to, you know, the unique structures at Pickett and to be able to honor the work and legacy of those young men, not only those that worked at Pickett, but also those that worked across the state of Tennessee.
So when were the CCC units there in doing that construction of that park? But what years was that?
If my memory is serving me correctly, work commenced about 1934 under guidance of, you know, the National Park Service and the Division of Forestry. That area was designated as a state forest when the land was donated from the Stearns Coal and Lumber Company. So there was actually, over the course of the project, there were three total CCC companies that were there. Initially, it was, I believe, Company 1471 and Camp 1223, which was eventually moved out of the area and sent to Washington, and they brought in 447. So the 1471, if you're familiar with the Pickett area, where the Pickett State Forest offices are, was the location of that camp. Okay. And then where our present day group camp is at Pickett State Park was the location of Camp 447.
Okay.
So they worked in conjunction to build the park, but 447, the best of my understanding of the history, is they built the majority of the structures that you see within the park, but 1471 did build, you know, the lake and the dam and a couple of different structures there as well.
I've posted recently to the Facebook page of the Mark Fraley podcast some pictures of the historic cabins that we're speaking of, and I was trying to think about how does one actually describe the character in words of those unique structures. They're just gorgeous, but I guess they are parkitecture. If you wanted to imagine a structure, a design that fits in a park, that's the epitome of it.
Yeah, the phrase that comes to mind, two phrases. One is parkitecture, like you said, like it belongs there. But right. I worked with another employee at Standing Stone State Park that had some interesting sayings, and he would say stuff like, "Well, I may have to interpret this, but he'd say it looks like it growed there.
It growed there.
So, you know, if it grew in place, that would be a good way to describe those using the native stone and wood of the area." It looks like it belongs.
So I encourage people to go to the Facebook page of the Mark Fraley podcast and check out those pictures. They are part of a promotion that Parks is doing to attract people to come and visit them now that they're newly renovated. And they've been there since the 30s, and they've been renovated several times. Some successful renovations and some not quite so successful. But tell us about the process that you went through to have such gorgeous results that you've had with this most recent renovation.
Well, as I came to be the park manager at Pickett, I was fortunate to kind of step into a situation where a lot of that work had already been done by the previous park manager. His name's Alan Wasick, and has done a tremendous job for the almost 20 years that he was there. And I know that he was a huge advocate for those facilities, and he was a key component to getting the Iron Mike statue that memorializes the CCC at the museum there. And right. So I know the CCC was very important to him. So he did a lot of the legwork to get a lot of that done. So when I came, the project had already been identified, and unfortunately, you know, just due to the rising cost of things, it didn't happen the first year I was there. And the Parks Administration, you know, kept advocating on behalf of those structures and how important they were, and were able to secure the funding to do this project. And, you know, the emphasis of the project was, you know, a renovation, but more so just a restoration to be able to make sure that those structures, you know, have the integrity to last for another generation. So the next 75, 80 years that, you know, there's still people that can come and enjoy those.
So were you able to obtain original drawings that were used in the construction?
Yeah, we had access to a lot of, you know, just original drawings and blueprints, for lack of a better way to describe mm-hmm. it. The architect firm, they worked off of those, especially if you look at the photos, the one that's got the shingle siding, they actually had the prints and the drawings for those that showed, you know, window height and how big were the windows, where were they placed. And they used that to, as the inspiration to, you know, replicate those things. And we had some other things that showed, you know, basic layout of cabins, just a variety of things. So they were using that as inspiration to do a restoration as best we could.
So give us some examples of items that were there and how they've been improved. I know we've talked about appliances, their finishings of the floors, the bathrooms, the windows. I know you talked about window treatment. Give us some examples about the challenges you faced there.
Well, some of the, in the stone cabins was probably the largest challenge that we had is, and I say we, it was mostly, you know, contractors and subcontractors figuring out how to do that and to maintain the integrity and not do any damage. So in the past, when they actually added the electricity, what they had done is they'd used some wooden posts and they chiseled out the interior of those. And it was an add-on feature that obviously wasn't original. So what this group did is they removed all of those items and they actually would remove portions of the stone mortar, the chinking in between the stone and run the electrical within that to hide it. You know, running stuff in between door casings and, you know, those things were slow process, a big challenge, but visually you don't see those things that are anachronistic to the, you know, the integrity of the interior of those cabins.
That's and, fascinating.
Yeah. So, and the things like, you know, just period correct type of lighting, small little touches, you know, zinc countertops, you know, just things of that nature.
Tell me about the countertops.
Initially, the designs called for just, you know, finished pine countertops and as a part manager,
that would have been the original finish.
Yeah. And we know that in other parks, they had used zinc countertops because, you know, that was period correct for those parks. So Standing Stone State Park, they had used those in their cabin renovation and it was the same architect firm. So I think that those cabins had that previously. So we brought it on to Pickett because as a park manager, you look at things, you know, as safety and durability, as well as something that's historically appropriate. And we felt like a zinc metal countertop would be a little bit more durable than just a finished pine top for the longevity of the interior.
Right. And you don't want to go with formica or something like that. All right.
Yeah. And that's what we were going away from.
That's what I recall. Exactly.
Yes, sir.
And you were talking about the window replacements.
Right. So window replacements only occurred in cabins 1 and 4.
Okay.
And that's the ones with the wood shingles on the sides of them. The stone cabins have original windows. So the idea behind those was to try to keep all of the original components as best we could, you know, try to work on them so they operate smoothly and try to, you know, create as much weather stripping and things of that nature as you could. And the contractor was actually fortunate because we have one of the employees at Pickett is actually a really talented blacksmith. So some of the hardware for the windows that was missing or broken, he was able to replicate that for them. Very, very talented. So, yeah.
Now, there's always the challenge of heating, ventilation, and air conditioning. And I remember, you know, my last visit to Pickett was probably 86 or 87. And I remember in those days, the air conditioning units installed in the windows in the summertime and just ugly, just completely wrong for those structures. But people were demanding air conditioning, and so how did you accommodate the HVAC issues?
Well, whenever I got to, I think Alan Wasick must have made the decision to remove those window units because he probably had the same feelings that you had.
Right.
I would rather have a hot cabin than have something that just looks atrocious hanging off the side of it. So part of this project installed split units, and the architect firm was able to kind of render some drawings to hide the interior components of those units. So outside is a condensing unit. On the interior, they've kind of, like in an attic space, they've enclosed that and try to route the ductwork where, you know, other than a few registers, you don't really see units, and it doesn't, you know, just catch the eye. And the thought process behind that was it might make it where somebody who otherwise couldn't or wouldn't visit the park and right. enjoy those cabins in the summer or in the winter would be more likely to be able to come and enjoy those. So it was a sacrifice that we made.
I guess it goes without saying the cabins originally did not have any kind of central heater or air fireplaces in them, though, right?
Yes, they still have wood burning fireplaces, and part of this project actually did quite a bit of work to ensure that they're safe and operable. Installed some new fire brick and some new liners to make sure that, you know, guests were safe, but it still looks appropriate of the era.
All right. Now, just going out in our focus just a little bit. Pickett is just one of several parks that have done this type of project.
Yes. The Cumberland Mountain State Park had a similar project. Standing Stone State Park, of course, theirs are WPA, but of the same era, have completed theirs. And Chickasaw State Park in West Tennessee is currently underway.
Okay.
So this is a big emphasis for the Tennessee State Parks administrations to, you know, to show the importance of these structures and their significance, not only in the state of Tennessee, but, you know, national significance.
That's just terrific. And have you had a good response from the public?
Absolutely. You know, we were one of those, maybe an oddity, where there were people that had some hesitancy with the installation of central heat and air. You know, they wanted to maintain that the originality of those cabins, and they didn't want something that, you know, they didn't want televisions, they didn't want Wi-Fi there. Although there's a few people that would like to have those things, but the response has been that I've received has been overwhelmingly positive. That people appreciate the way that they were done, but more so than anything, they've expressed their appreciation for the fact that it was done and it was done tastefully, which tells me that, you know, Pickett is a park that has a lot of people who come back year after year, and that park is near and dear to their heart, and those buildings are a part of that.
So to be clear, you made the choice to have heating and ventilation and air conditioning, but you also made the choice not to have telephones and TVs.
Correct. I would say that I was an advocate for not going down that road. Obviously, at my level, I don't get to make all of those choices.
Sure.
You know,
it's a group decision.
Yeah.
Clearly. Yeah.
So I tried to, you know, from a good standpoint, and just say, hey, this is why we feel the way we feel. Some of it's spatial concerns. Some of it is, you know, infrastructure issues of even getting lines there and what does it do visually. You know, making decisions of, you know, we went electric on things because a propane tank outside of a CCC cabin for us would not look appropriate. And making those decisions that, you know, as you approach a cabin as a visitor, maybe for a brief period of time, you can kind of, you know, transport back to the early 1930s or 1940s, at least in your mind a little bit. I know that might sound cliche, but part of that is the visual and the park visitor experience.
Exactly. Travis, if a person wants to rent these cabins, what's the process or procedure for doing that?
The easiest way that people can do that is through the park website. And then, you know, the easiest way to find that is tnstateparks.com. And then just search for Pickett State Park. You can choose from any of the 56 state parks that we have. And then, you know, you'll find our individual page and you can find the cabin page from there. And you can make your reservations. Otherwise, if people aren't comfortable doing that, you know, our office is open from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Central Time, 7 days a week, when we're not in the middle of a snow and ice event. But we're happy to help people, you know, over the telephone if they're more comfortable.
That's terrific. Now, describe in the cabins, how many, you said there were four cabins. How many people can each of them house?
So, just for me to clarify, we actually have five CCC cabins.
Okay.
We have two of them that are the ones with the wood shingle siding, and those are basically set up to house two people. There's one bed, one king size bed there, and then the other three cabins, which are the stone cabins.
Ideal for a couple, just having a weekend or a week or whatever, right?
Absolutely.
Right.
The stone cabins, basically, they have two, what you would consider full-size beds in the cabin. There's what one might consider as a bedroom. It's got one bed in it. And then in the living space, which may seem odd, has a bed next to the dining table and the fireplace, but we use the inspiration based on the original blueprints to add that back. So that was one of the reasons why we did that. So some people kind of, why is there a bedroom or a bed in the living space? Well, that's why.
That's just terrific. Well, Travis, thank you so much for spending some time with us today. Before we go, tell us who, to give credit where credit is due, who was the architecture firm that was involved in this project and some of the others?
Sparkman and Associates out of Knoxville, Tennessee. Okay. We work primarily with architect Daniel Cooter and then Suzanne Taravella. And they've been integral in creating and crafting this and approaching it from a standpoint of they want to make sure that it honors the CCC, not just doing what's easiest or most expedient, but what makes the most sense.
Terrific. Travis, again, thank you so much for joining us today, and best of luck with your new revived cabins.
Well, I appreciate you having me on, and appreciate you taking a few minutes to highlight Pickett. And I expect you not to wait too much longer to come in.
No, I'm going to take you up on your invitation to get up there and visit. It's been too long since I've been up in that neck of the woods.
Well, I don't know you well enough to fuss on you, but if it's been since 1987, you need to make another.
Well, I need to be fussed on. There's no question. All right. Thank you, Travis. Take care.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
All right. All right. Stay on the line just a second.